Welcome to Cardiovascular Matters. Whether you are looking for answers for yourself or someone you love, we are here to give you the best information available. Each week, the founder of Cardiovascular Institute of the South, Dr. Craig Walker, and medical device sales veteran, Terry Roberts, discuss the causes, symptoms, treatment, and prevention of health-related issues stemming from cardiovascular disease. Now here's your hosts, Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts.
Hey, welcome back to Cardiovascular Matters. You know, the premise of this podcast was started based on, you know, my observation of patients that would go see their doctor, and then everything's coming at them so fast, and a lot of big words and, scientific jargon, and maybe didn't understand exactly what the physician was saying, or maybe could not remember, didn't hear what was being said. So welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Walker, as he's our expert and has been a great friend of mine and a customer of mine back in the day when I was working for the big medical device companies. So anyway, thanks for coming back, and be sure and like and follow us. We're available on all the platforms, but be sure and like and follow us. That helps our algorithm and helps us grow, and pass this along to your friends. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show. Good afternoon. Well, today's topic with Dr. Walker is the diagnosis and treatment of pulmonary embolisms. And Craig, I'm going to turn it over to you, and I'll come in with a few questions as I come to them.
Thank you, Terry. You know, pulmonary embolus, or a blood clot thrown to the lungs, is the second leading cause of death in our country. And it's easy to understand how this causes death. So when we throw a blood clot to our lungs, it creates a strain on the heart, but it stops us from oxygenating our blood, which we need oxygenated blood for things to work. And so the very first symptom is people get short of breath. And pulmonary emboli can be small, they can be moderate, or they can be really huge. And in particular, huge pulmonary emboli are often fatal. We have arrhythmias and we may die. Now, there's been tremendous progress made in terms of both the diagnosis and prevention, as well as the treatment of pulmonary emboli. So to start with, the best thing to do is to avoid them, right? We know there are certain things that predispose us to pulmonary emboli. Pulmonary emboli typically arise from clots in the legs. They typically arise from venous clots somewhere in the body. This clot breaks free, and it travels up the vena cava or down the superior vena cava into the heart, and it goes through the right atrium, the right ventricle, and then out into the pulmonary artery and into the lungs. There it lodges. Can't really easily go through the lungs. It lodges out in the capillaries, stopping our body's ability to oxygenate itself. Now, small emboli make it just less able, and you have those other symptoms, and you have to worry about subsequent emboli. Large emboli, you may have complete hemodynamic collapse at that moment. Great strides have been made, actually, in all of these things, and certainly hospitals have responded by creating PERT teams. PERT stands for Pulmonary Embolus Response Teams, P-E-R-T. And this is our series of specialists aimed at being able to treat pulmonary emboli. So as we look at the history of treating pulmonary emboli, the first thing that we're done is simply put people on blood thinners, such as heparin. Now, that's helpful, but it does not dissolve clots. All that heparin does is stop more clot from being formed and transmitted. And so in early stages of pulmonary emboli with small emboli, we may not need to go beyond that point because the body has the chance to potentially clean things up. But what about the patient who comes in that's had such a massive pulmonary embolus that they cannot oxygenate themselves? Well, once again, let's go back to who's going to get a pulmonary embolus? Why do you get pulmonary emboli? And then how can we treat even the most severe pulmonary embolus? So I've mentioned this all starts with a clot in a vein. And typically, we know from Virchow, one of the most famous pathologists of all time, published around the time of the American Civil War, what was called Virchow's triad. He says three things make you more likely to clot. One, you may be hypercoagulable. And there are acquired things that can make you hypercoagulable, or non-acquired things, things that you're born with. Second thing is injury. If you injure a vein, it's more likely to clot. The third thing is stasis. Stasis means if blood is not moving through a vein very well, it's more likely to clot. So let's look at, to start with, hypercoagulability itself. Some people are born, just like some people are born and they're free bleeders. Some people are born where they clot more than other people. They may have antiphospholipid syndrome. They may have things that they're born with, factor Leiden 5 deficiency. There are many of these things which make some people much more likely to clot. Secondly, there are things we do to ourselves that make ourselves more likely to clot. Things like smoking cigarettes or taking birth control pills. Hormones can affect this. Third thing that might make people more likely to clot are exogenous things that may happen to us, forms of cancer, other things such as that. Those all create a hyperthrombotic state and make us at much greater risk of forming clots. And once those clots form, then they're more likely to move. So that's hypercoagulability, one of those 3 points of Virchow. The other is stasis. Stasis means blood's not moving as quickly through something. And what would cause that? Well, prolonged bed rest, certainly. People who cannot move very well, who've maybe had strokes and they can't move their legs. And so things are stationary for long periods of time. People who are post-surgery, in particular, hip and knee surgery, much more likely to form clots. We always hear of the patient who's been on long trips, who has a clot thrown after a long trip. Well, that's a minor risk, but there are minor, moderate, and major risks to form clot from stasis. And then, of course, injury. Anyone who's been in a big motorcycle accident, a car accident, they banged up, the vessels have gotten traumatized. Any of those patients are at higher risk. And if we see those problems, we want to do what we call prophylaxis, or try to stop that clot from forming and moving. So we can do things like putting compression hose on the legs, keeping these patients on anticoagulants to try to stop clot formation. And that's what we can do to help prevent a pulmonary embolus in the first place. But if a pulmonary embolus has occurred, if blood clots have been formed and have gone to the lungs, what can we do? Well, I've mentioned first, we would give heparin to stop more clot from forming, but then we can also deal with the clot itself. Now, the very first treatment of pulmonary embolus was to use thrombolytic therapy. Now, thrombolytics are medicines that we give in high dose that dissolve clot. Our body has thrombolytic agents, and in fact, companies have found how to make some of the same agents that our body has and make a lot of it to use more than our body would typically produce. One of those is called tissue plasminogen activator, or TPA. So one of the first treatments that would happen when people would have a pulmonary embolus would be to give that patient TPA. Initially, that could be given just via a vein, or later on, people started administering it within the pulmonary artery itself to try to get a high concentration of TPA into the lungs. And there's a lot of debate which is better, but certainly both of those methods are effective. But TPA takes a little bit time to work, and it has a potential risk. That potential risk is, since it's a clot dissolver, there's a risk of bleeding. And that bleeding can be really serious. In fact, some people have experienced bleeds into the brain that could be fatal, or they could have lost a lot of blood if they had a bleeding source with this. And so certainly we always have concerns about giving this therapy, but again, we must weigh benefit versus risk in a patient who may be otherwise dying from a pulmonary embolus, which can of course kill us very suddenly. Now, recently, thrombectomy devices have been developed that are showing tremendous promise in treating patients with large pulmonary emboli. Now, we would not use these in a patient who has a minor embolus. We would treat those patients with anticoagulation and watch them and perhaps some steroids. But a patient who has a serious embolus and is having trouble maintaining oxygenation, having trouble maintaining blood pressure, we now have options to treat. In the most extreme cases, we can put these patients on what is called ECMO, which is a form of circulatory support where we can oxygenate the patient when the lungs themselves cannot oxygenate the patient, giving us time to deal with the clot. This can be miraculous and life-saving. And it allows us to go in and deal with the clot. You can do that with lytics or these new devices that let us remove clot. And these have been, in my opinion, transformative. So these devices, a couple to mention, are Penumbra and Anori, but there are others being developed, AngioVac. These allow us to remove large, really massive clots in the lungs and do it quickly. And I've seen patients come in with on 100% oxygen who were struggling to breathe, who in minutes, who had very high pulmonary artery pressures because of these large clot burns that had been sent to their lungs, who within minutes were sitting comfortably, breathing and talking. It's really been incredibly dramatic because these can remove in very, very short time, almost immediately, they can remove clot. Now, these are big structures. Of course, there's risk whenever you go in to the lungs with anything. But the risk has been actually quite low if we look at the risk-benefit profile. These seem to be incredibly effective. As I said, you don't use these in all cases. But when a person is coming in and they're dying from their pulmonary embolus, these can absolutely be life-saving and can do so in such a short period of time that I think they represent transformative therapy.
Where do you access or gain access to introduce that either one of those devices or that classification of device?
Yeah, that's a great thought because to get into a vein, we have veins all over our body we can access.
Right, right.
And I would say that the major sources of vein access in dealing with pulmonary emboli are the veins of the leg, or sometimes the internal jugular vein in the neck. We can do this using ultrasound. It's a very, very simple access typically, especially when the vein is distended because the pressures are high on the right side of the heart. That makes the veins much bigger. So we look at this by external ultrasound, not intravascular. By external ultrasound, you can see it. You can see your needle. And so you have a target. It's a very easy thing to hit. We then thread a soft wire in and we place a sheath. And the sheath has to be large enough to accommodate any of the devices that we're planning to treat this with. Now, after treatment, vein pressures typically are quite low, and these are usually easy to control. Bleeding is much less common with a vein procedure than with an arterial procedure because of that.
That's interesting. So I'm assuming the sheath is almost acts as a guide to get the device in the area you want. It's a long sheath, and then when the procedure's over, you just remove everything and hold pressure?
That's right. Well, what we do, typically we use a catheter and a guide wire of some sort. We probe our way until we get into the pulmonary artery. An image is taken, an angiogram is taken, and it shows us where the clot is and how much clot it is. We then place the guide wire out into that area where the clot is, and then we drive the bigger structure up over that guide wire, which has now been safely placed, until we get into the area that it can effectively suck out the clot that's in there. It's sort of like a big vacuum cleaner sucking this clot out at that point. And these devices have been created to where we can limit blood loss because they only suck when they see there's clot, not just sucking out a bunch of blood at the same time. I mean, this is really technological advancement that has saved numerous lives in today's world, in my opinion.
That is I mean, a blessing for people that suffer a pulmonary embolism, especially the one large enough that they're struggling to breathe. And, you know, if you know, most people that have been around this know that those patients, their prognosis is not good. So truly a life-saving measure.
But, you know, Terry, I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that many people fail to prevent a pulmonary embolus that they could have prevented. Like, patients may develop sudden painful swelling of a leg and they ignore it. And a leg shouldn't just suddenly painfully swell. And particularly if they've had injury to that leg, or particularly if they're hypercoagulable or if they've been immobile, they should fear that that may represent clot. That clot may never move from that leg at all, but it should be evaluated. It should be evaluated very carefully. You don't necessarily have to remove all clots from a leg by any means, but you clearly don't want that clot going up to the lungs. That's where it can kill people and can do so very quickly. And so it is very important for patients to understand these signs and symptoms. That's a big part of why I wanted to involve myself with a podcast, is to let the lay public understand how to help take care of themselves. All too often, we count on, I always say, there are people who can always take care of my problems. Well, actually, still, all of us owe it to ourselves to be personally responsible for our health care, because getting to things early makes all the difference in the world. An ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure. It's worth your life. And it's very important to prevent and to understand our bodies and to understand when something's wrong with our bodies.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Walker, thank you so much for this deep dive on pulmonary embolisms. And stay tuned next week for more topics in cardiovascular medicine.
Thanks for listening. And please subscribe, like, and share this podcast with your friends and family. Join us next week for new topics and answers with Dr. Craig Walker and Terry Roberts on Cardiovascular Matters.